facts himself. Sometimes the author was wrong, which was the danger of second-hand information. But the more knowledge Nathan gained, the closer he felt to reproducing Kadria's magic. He didn't know how much time passed. Were the Beastkin knights still watching him from afar, giggling to each other and talking about the things they wanted to do to him? Had Nadime and Seraph stopped arguing? Did it matter? Footsteps approached. Nathan's hand instinctively reached for his sword, and the book flapped in the air. He looked in the direction of the sound. It was only Faye. He resumed reading. "Don't ignore me," Faye whined. She dropped down next to him and began to push her way into his arms. He raised the book to prevent it from being damaged as she wormed and writhed against him. Then she froze, realizing she had gone the wrong way. Her face was between his legs, and her ass was firmly in his face. He steadfastly tried to look over it at his book, but found his task difficult. There was a bushy black tail waving in front of his face. Every time it passed by, it blocked his view of his book, but not of the rear sticking out in front of him. "Whoops," Faye said. She tried to turn around, which only made things more awkward. There wasn't enough room between his arms. She pulled her legs in, but then got stuck and tried to push them out.
"You're going to snap my arms off if you keep that up," Nathan said.
He let go of the book and spread-eagled himself on the grass.
"I figured the book would break first," Faye said.
"It's enchanted to be quite sturdy. Do you think a mage tower is going to lend out books to bastions without thinking about the risk of damage? They want to dig this out of the rubble after the demons burned down half the empire," Nathan said.
"For a book?"
Faye's tone was incredulous. "They're sorcerers. Knowledge is more important than a few million measly lives," Nathan said.
"Aren't you a sorcerer?" Faye said.
"A pretty bad one. I make a better bastion," he said.
"If you're a bad sorcerer, I don't know if I want to meet a good one," Faye said.
She curled up against him and nestled her head in the crook of his neck. Within moments, a purring sound rose from her. Giving up on the idea of finishing his book, Nathan set it aside. He stroked Faye's hair with his hands, running his fingers through her messy hair. It needed to be cut. Not only had it grown almost a foot since he had met her, but it had also become a tangled mess of split ends and knots.
"If you don't take care of your hair, you need to keep it shorter," Nathan said.
She let out a whine.
"I take care of it at home."
"You mean I take care of it. You beg me to wash your hair every time we shower together," he said,
which was practically every day. If Faye didn't have Nathan for the night, she would usually find him in the morning for a shower. He didn't mind taking care of her tail, but at some point it had transformed to taking care of her in general. Most of the time it wasn't even lewd. She genuinely wanted him to wash her and preened after a good brushing of her hair and tail.
"Tonight?" Faye asked, eyes hopeful.
"Nadime complained about you being possessive," Nathan warned. "You're being very physical lately."
She pouted at him.
"Maybe tomorrow."
She perked back up and resumed purring. After a few moments, she said,
"It's not my fault I'm like this. Your pills suck."
"They did?"
"The rutting? You're still feeling it?"
"It's never stopped. Some days are better than others, but it's always a constant impulse. I never get so bad I feel the need to push you down and ride you for a few days, but I always need you."
Faye got up on all fours and stared directly into Nathan's eyes.
"We're going to have all the time in the world to get this over with once we're done, right?"
"Rutting doesn't work like that," Nathan said. "You're going to be like this for most of the next year. Then, after that, you'll feel like this for a few weeks every year."
Faye's expression dropped.
"What?"
Then she perked back up.
"Then can't we just get it over with?"
She giggled and reached a hand down his pants.
"I'm more than ready for some kittens."
"If it was that easy, I'd be more than willing," Nathan said, running a hand over Faye's belly. She gasped at his touch, eyes wide.
But it doesn't work. I'm sure you remember the older women in your village vanishing with their husbands every so often.
Faye blinked.
Oh, is that what that was? Huh, never thought of it that way.
She slumped against him. He rubbed her head.
The two of them rested in silence for several minutes. Her purring didn't resume, but that suited him fine. The sound of the surrounding camp kept him company. His hand ran through Faye's hair and tail, and he let his mind wander. For once, it didn't wander to things he shouldn't think about. He wondered about what Faye had asked him. He wondered about what would happen if he indulged Faye and gave her what she had asked for, even though it wouldn't really help her. Is that what he wanted? He had never considered children before. The world had always been too dangerous. Or was that an excuse? Would the world ever not be dangerous?
Nathan didn't know.
Nathan, Faye said suddenly.
He grunted in response, not paying much attention.
Why do you know so much more than everybody else? She asked.
I've mentioned before, in the academy, he tried to say.
We both went to the academy, and I don't remember those sorts of books. And my Meisters didn't know half the things you do, Faye said.
Her tone wasn't accusatory. She spoke calmly, as if talking about the things she had done while wandering around the camp.
The old lady fox knows super sorcery, and you still amazed her. Alice and Anna have their own libraries and tutors, but they listen to you talk the same way I do. Seraph is a spymaster and amazing champion that has taught me lots, but you know more than her. You even bossed around Leopold when the messenger came.
Nathan didn't say anything. Instead, he stared at the stars in the sky and dwelled on his mistake. Of course, it was Faye who realized. The Yefela from his timeline was far worldlier than the Faye pressed against him, but both women were sharper than they appeared to be at first blush. Faye asked questions about everything and soaked up knowledge like a sponge. She watched and listened to others. Her knack for eavesdropping on people and tagging along for conversations she had no role in was perennial. She formed opinions fast, but changed them almost as quickly.
Nathan? Faye asked.
How long have you suspected something? He asked.
Nothing made sense when you brought Sen back, and she just...
Faye trailed off and looked thoughtful.
Well, she just slipped into your bed like she belonged there. At first, I was jealous, and a bit terrified. I thought she might have used magic on you. I knew so little about magic, and she used a lot of it. But she was so friendly and clearly looked up to you, and she also acted differently.
That made sense. His conversion of Sen would have looked jarring, given she flipped from hate to love in the course of roughly 5 minutes, so far as Faye saw.
Then I looked back at earlier stuff, and everything was odd, Faye said. You immediately made me a champion. You knew about the enemy plan almost the moment you arrived. Everybody was shocked that you built Garrick Pass without help.
Faye arched her back and tried to look Nathan in the eyes. He grabbed her by her sides and flipped her over. She giggled.
Well, if she was giggling, then he took that as a sign that she didn't hate him.
Anything else? Nathan asked.
The amethyst, Faye said.
She placed a hand over her sapphire.
You went for it the moment Leopold gave you the 3 gems. I know you said that it was a standard gem for new champions, but...
Her voice dropped to a barely audible whisper.
That was my gem, wasn't it? I was supposed to take it. And I didn't.
Nathan had given Narime shit over being a terrible actor, but apparently he was far worse. Somehow, he had given away his secret to Faye within days of arriving in the timeline. He imagined that Kadria was struggling to breathe right now. She would be writhing around on the ground, laughing breathlessly at him.
No, you took the right gem, Nathan said.
Eh? Faye squeaked.
You are your own person. I gave you the choice, and you chose your own gem for your own reasons, he said.
But I... She trailed off, her voice choking up. I only picked it because I figured it was the one you least expected. You kept eyeing the amethyst, and I figured you knew something. If I chose the wrong gem, you'd have to correct me. Then I could say something, and you would have told me about everything. Like how Sen and Sunstorm and Seraph know everything.
Faye's eyes filled with tears. Her ears flattened against her head, and her tail stopped swishing behind her. With a breathy sigh, Nathan flattened her hair with one hand. She squeaked and stared at him. You silly kitten, Nathan said. You should have said something ages ago. Seraph doesn't know. Or if she did, which she probably did if Faye knew, then she hadn't confronted him yet. Sen and Sunstorm only know because they have a very special reason to know. You're the first person to find out.
I am?
You are, Nathan said.
He hoped he didn't regret this.
Then again, Faye trusted him. He should trust her, and hopefully avoid situations where she did things purely to bait a reaction from him. The choice of a sapphire had worked out brilliantly, but the revelation of why she chose it stung. He frowned suddenly as his mind kicked into gear. Things didn't add up, but he filed away the thought for later. Confronting Faye about it was pointless right now. Taking a deep breath, Nathan steeled himself to reveal the truth, or as much of it as he was willing to reveal. I'm from the future, Nathan said, or a future. It's complicated, but I'm from a world where you were my champion, but everything went wrong. I've come back to stop that.
Wrong, Faye repeated. Is that why your eyes get distant sometimes?
Probably, Nathan said.
Because I've seen that look in the beastkin who return from campaigns. It's part of why they like you. When you came out and met them, you had the same look in your eyes that they did. They knew immediately that you understood them and knew how to lead, unlike all the other nobles who had never seen real war, Faye said.
Damn. So that was what was behind her outburst before the battle to recapture Vera's towers. The Beastkin veterans had gossiped. Figures that the old bastards recognized like. They were used to living in a meat grinder, and that was the best way to describe Nathan's timeline. An endless meat grinder that consumed every nation, one by one. But yes, a lot went wrong. Too much. But you're not the Yphela from my timeline. You're Faye, and I love you for being Faye.
Nathan closed his arms around her, and she giggled at the contact.
So don't worry about it so much. I know the things I do because I've seen a lot more of the world than my past suggests. But I'm here to make the future a lot better than the one I saw.
That's good, Faye said. And thank you for telling me. I was really worried about what would happen.
She paused.
Does that mean I get to be part of your secret conversations with Sen and Sunstorm?
Yes, although you might struggle to keep up, Nathan said. And you can't tell anybody that I don't give you permission to tell.
I know. I haven't told anybody else so far, have I? She said.
True.
He laid in the grass with her in his arms. It was pleasant enough that he dropped the one remaining topic he had in mind. Namely, if Faye had really chosen the sapphire because he hadn't expected it, why hadn't he detected that instability during the gemming ceremony? Chapter 36. The rest of his champions arrived several days later. Sunstorm appeared in the command tent that morning, and her army reached Nathan's in the afternoon. Sen and Sunstorm wasted no time in catching up with Nathan. Once their soldiers began to encamp, both of them walked into the command tent and dragged Nathan out of it.
You realize we have a battle tomorrow, Nathan said.
They can plan it,
Sen said, gesturing to the other champions and officers in the command tent. Sunstorm nodded in agreement. Surprisingly, Faye didn't object. She waved at her fellow champions as they dragged him to his tent. It was an enjoyable night. It was also a long night. Both women made up for lost time.
It's morning. Haven't you had enough yet? Nathan groaned.
He'd gotten in a few hours of sleep when the two of them had slipped off to the baths together. Presumably, they had gotten some sleep after they returned, as they hadn't woken him up immediately. The idea was to attack Tartus today. Being exhausted hampered that plan. Sunstorm pressed herself against him and smirked, her black bangs falling over her face.
You've been enjoying somebody new while we've been busy. We could keep you here all day, right, Sen?
I want to say no, but she's right, Sen said.
She cradled Nathan's head in her lap and ran her fingers through his hair.
A few more hours will be fine, right?
Where do you even get the stamina? He asked.
Well, I have this magic gem in my chest, and she has a timeless spirit possessing her, Sunstorm said.
Thank you for your illuminating explanation, Cho, Nathan drawled.
Sunstorm blushed and ducked her head.
Don't call me that in front of others.
I'm the only one here, Sen said.
And I don't want you to call me that either, Sunstorm muttered.
It took a little while, but Nathan managed to negotiate his way out of their embrace, although it involved a trip to the baths that the soldiers had set up. To create the baths, the battle mages had summoned water in large pools that the soldiers dug. Normally, this was an unspeakable luxury. Wasting so much effort on temporary bathing seemed ridiculous. But Nathan hadn't known how long they'd be camped outside Tartus. Close to a week had passed since arriving, and it could have been another week if things went poorly for Sen's march. Bathing kept morale up. Soldiers remained clean. They had somewhere to congregate and wash off the filth from a day of patrolling in heavy armor. The beastkin especially loved a chance to wash their tails and clean each other, as most of them came from villages with cultures that deeply valued physicality. Nathan had even allowed the battle mages to heat some of the water once it became clear that the Federation wasn't going to attack. This was a huge waste of magical power. On the other hand, he wasn't going to complain about the chance to rinse off in a heated bath. Winter was recent enough that the ground chilled the water far below their body temperature. Once clean, and not in the lewd way, the baths weren't segregated by gender but were too open for public shows of affection, Nathan joined his cabinet in the command tent.
Oh, you're finally joining us, Vera said, raising an eyebrow.
She flicked her long red hair.
We had wondered if the assault was tomorrow. You seemed busy when Faye went to fetch you.
Faye smiled and shrugged at his questioning look.
More to the point, we think that Tanias is still in Tartus, Narime said.
Seraph nodded in agreement.
Of course he is, Nathan said.
He joined them around the table. There weren't any maps on it, as they were capturing a city, and there weren't any accurate ones of Tartus. The city was an urban sprawl that had slowly grown to its current size over the course of millennia. Nobody had planned anything, and city blocks morphed in and out of existence every few years.
Why do you think that? Narime asked, tone accusatory.
Because Tanias had refused to leave his palace during Nathan's timeline. Somehow, Nathan felt that reason wouldn't fly. Faye looked at him expectantly.
Because Tanias is prideful and arrogant. He's holding on to the last vestiges of his power, even as the other regents betray him. We've been camped outside Tartus for days. Our scouts have reported no movements from the other provinces, Nathan said. There are armies on the borders, just in case we pull something, but the other regents have abandoned Tanias.
Isn't that more reason for him to hole up with Fias in the castle? Anna said. It's the safest place here.
Imagine that you're the Emperor, or the Empress, if you really want to self-insert yourself, Nathan said. Your enemies are at the gates of the capital. you're outnumbered. All of your nobles have betrayed you because they think they'll have a chance to become emperor next. Nobody is coming to save you. Even if you somehow survive the battle, what do you think happens to you in that situation?
Well, I don't think I'd be empress for very long, Anna said. She grimaced. In other words, Tanius knows this is the end. Even if he defeats us, he's lost.
Yes, Nathan said. If he wins here, the other regents topple him from power anyway. All that cowering behind Phaeus achieves is prolonging the inevitable. But if he stays in the palace, he can appear strong until the end. He goes out on his own terms, in the place of his greatest triumph and power.
Seraphim Narime stared at Nathan.
You're rather good at understanding Tanius, Nathan, Seraph said. I can't help but think that you would do the same thing.
I wouldn't, Nathan said. No, he wouldn't, Vera agreed. I got a taste of that in summer when he said he'd turn my tower into a crater if he thought he had no way out.
The tent fell silent.
What? Seraph shouted. Why in the name of the goddess didn't you mention that to me any time in the last few months?
I didn't feel it was important, Vera smirked. Besides, Nathan and I had a long chat about last stands and walking into traps.
Seraph shouted something, but both Narime and Anna spoke at the same time as her. Nathan's other champions appeared bewildered by the revelation. They looked at each other in confusion, before staring at Nathan. When they began to talk as well, the tent became a cacophony of voices.
Enough! Nathan shouted.
Everybody shut up. Like Vera said, we spoke about what happened, and I realized I was hasty, Nathan said. That's why I'm planning for more contingencies now. Tanius is in this spot because he didn't plan far enough ahead.
Although he certainly planned for a lot. Enough that he fooled Nathan into thinking that the future was predetermined.
I'm still rather lost, Anna said. Why is everybody freaked out over blowing up Vera's tower? I know we were worried about a trap, and, Vera admitted to the whole spy thing.
The what?
Faye asked, eyes wide.
I'll explain later, Nathan said, placing a hand on top of her head. He was going to overload the cairn below my tower. Big explosion of magic. Everybody within hundreds of meters would have been vaporized, Vera said. I've heard of accidents where that happens, but I didn't know it could be done intentionally.
I'm amazed you even know magic like that, Seraph said. No wonder you recognized my plan instantly. You're like a repository of heresy.
Everybody except Narime looked at Seraph. Overloading a cairn isn't heresy, Nathan said calmly.
That depends on how you do it, Seraph said. Because cairns don't simply overload. If they could, they'd explode every time a cascade happened.
Narime nodded.
The design of cairns allows sorcerers to channel magic through them during cascades or other periods of ley line disruption. They have emergency releases for magic on them, just in case. Cairns only overload when somebody is interfering with the flow of magic within them.
Which is what I would have done, Nathan admitted.
That was heresy in Kurai, Seraph said.
He raised an eyebrow. It was?
That sounds more like a law, as I know it's not regulated here. Although I know why somebody would consider it heresy. A lot can go wrong. It involves some fairly complicated binding stone magic.
It was also the foundation of Nathan's method of detonating binding stones. Destroying a binding stone, or cairn, was permanent. No life grew within the radius of the explosion, and no magic could be cast. If somebody ever detonated a binding stone or cairn in the way that Nathan knew how, every nation on the mainland would immediately label it heresy.
His eyes widened.
Oh, somebody fucked up, didn't they? I don't know much about the Kurai Peninsula, but you had a wasteland there, didn't you?
Narime and Seraph looked at each other, then stared at Nathan with wide eyes.
I think we'll drop this topic for today, Narime said. For today, Seraph repeated for emphasis. Because it's rather terrifying that you know the potential consequences and still dabble with the magic.
Yes, dabble. That was exactly what Nathan did. He wasn't looking forward to that conversation when it did happen.
A cough from Vera drew the meeting back to the primary topic. Looks were thrown at Nathan, but he ignored them.
If Tanius is in the palace, we can bypass the army, and hopefully the entire battle, Anna said. Narime can teleport, and she can bypass anti-teleportation wards.
Nathan knew where this was going. He let the conversation play out for now, although the sense of déjà vu he received bothered him. Even with different people present, events tried to play out the same way.
Narime faced Nathan and said,
I can teleport you and the other champions directly into the palace. Once there, we can capture Tanius. No field battle outside the city. Tanius likely has only a single champion protecting him, given how selfish Fias is.
Sounds smart, Sunstorm said. Although I still feel we should take out Fias.
Her fingers brushed her short swords.
If he surrenders, then he gets to live, Seraph reminded Sunstorm. If.
Her eyes gleamed. And that's precisely the issue with this plan, Nathan said. You're assuming the Federation Army will surrender.
Anna raised an eyebrow and crossed her arms over her chest.
Why wouldn't they? We'll have their regent. Haven't we all agreed that Fias is only a puppet? Why would the common soldiers keep fighting?
Last time I checked, we're invading their home, Nathan said. Armies don't shrug their shoulders and go, well, time to give up on everything I know and love, because we captured a politician.
Seraph and Narime opened their mouths to disagree, but closed them a moment later. Thoughtful expressions crossed their faces. The teleportation strategy would work, in a sense. Tanius was likely still in the palace. Nobody was defending him, save for some loyal guards and retainers. But Nathan's memories were of a furious argument with a ruler who had lost everything he had gained in his life. At some point, it became clear that Tanius wouldn't come peacefully. He would see everything burn before he gave in. Weapons were drawn. Narime turned Tanius and his retainers into ash. Killing him solved nothing. If anything, it made things worse. Tartus burned, and the Federation was lost within a few short months. The Garrick Mountains became a line of desperate defense against a horde of demons. Refugees streamed into Western Domar.
Bastions decide battles, Nathan said.
Fias is an idiot, but he's also an arrogant and prideful ass. Without Tanius, who will protect him? Who will stop him from fighting to the end?
Seraph grimaced.
You're saying that Fias is the real threat, she cursed. So long as there's a bastion backing them, the Federation Army won't surrender. 3 Duogem champions is a lot of inspiration. Most armies would rally behind one.
Politicians and rulers can scheme and plot all they like, but on a battlefield, the only people that matter are bastions and champions. Nathan said. That means we need to eliminate Fias first. Once he's gone, the Federation Army has nobody to lead them, and Tanius really will have nothing left.
Nathan didn't know if this would work, but he needed to try something to change the future. Everything he had done had somehow looped back around. Stopping the war had prevented the Empire from collapsing, but now he faced the collapse of the Federation. Maybe predetermination wasn't real, but changing the future required genuine effort. Changing a few key actors in history and preventing a few events from happening wasn't enough to prevent disaster. Like Ifrit had said, there were people behind the collapse of Domar. It took a concerted effort to create such an awful future. Naturally, it took as much effort to create a better future.
So we teleport inside Fias's fortress? Narime asked.
Nathan nodded. It's a lot more dangerous. We won't know what traps he has.
Attacking a bastion inside a fortress he controls is extremely dangerous. Fortunately, I have 3 binding stones to counter him with,
and a lot of experience battling rogue bastions, but he left that part unsaid. Narime and Seraph shared what they knew about Castle Tartus, which was the fortress Fias controlled. As everybody formed their attack plans, Vera pulled Nathan aside.
"We discussed this idea before, but I wanted to bring it up again," Vera muttered.
"When we defeat Fias, that means there's going to be 2 binding stones available, right? One here and 1 farther north."
"Yes," Nathan said. He knew where this was going.
"What would it take for me to claim one?" Vera asked.
"Training," Nathan said.
He held up a hand before Vera said anything.
"You still don't know how to be a bastion, even though I've taught you quite a bit about the magic we use. I've been avoiding that, given Leopold's..."
He trailed off. "Disapproval of me?" Vera suggested.
"That," Nathan said. "But if I give you a binding stone, I'm responsible for what happens. Becoming a bastion means you need to defend it against demons. Sometimes that's easy. Other times it means facing down almost certain death. You saw what happened to Leopold."
Vera grimaced and looked away. "I still can't believe what happened. I thought for sure that messenger killed him. It was terrifying. Nerevia didn't even react. She just kept fighting, as if it was an everyday thing."
"And you still want to become a bastion?"
"If anything, that reinforced my desire. Idiots like Fias will be the death of everybody if a messenger attacks them. But I get your point," Vera sighed. "I want one of those binding stones. I'll do whatever it takes to become a bastion and to help you. Surely you don't plan to do this alone. The Cascade proved that you can't be everywhere at once." Part of Nathan wanted to ask Leopold for permission. But that was cowardice. He had been left with ultimate authority by Leopold. If that wasn't a gesture of trust, then nothing was. The decision was Nathan's to make, and it wasn't as though he didn't trust his own judgment.
"Fine. After this, you'll become my apprentice," Nathan said. "If you prove yourself, you'll get your own binding stone."
"So you'll transfer me one of these?" Vera asked. He frowned.
"I don't know. Binding stone connections are permanent. While other bastions can claim a binding stone, the original connection remains. Fias is still connected to the binding stone under Castle Forselberg, for example. I've cut him off from it, but he could wrest it back if he physically went there. No amount of wards could stop him."
In Falmir, many binding stones were granted to apprentices by their masters or another powerful bastion. Officially and culturally, this gave the appearance of experienced bastions welcoming new bastions into the fold. Behind the scenes, it also allowed Falmir to easily remove new bastions if necessary. Should a new bastion prove troublesome once he was no longer monitored by his master, his binding stone could be taken from him with minimal effort. Nathan disliked this practice and preferred to avoid doing it to Vera. Given Kadria had been able to sever Nathan's connections to his binding stones in his timeline, he knew that binding stone connections weren't truly permanent, but his mental magic was too weak to sever them yet. Killing Fias was a simple way to solve an existing problem, but didn't help with Vera or future bastions. Nathan planned to learn how to both protect his binding stones better and sever the connections of bastions when he claimed new binding stones.
"I'll think of something," Nathan said. "Are you already busy thinking of your future champions that will be at your beck and call?"
He raised an eyebrow at her. Vera stared at him blankly. A moment later, she ran a hand down her face. "Oh, goddess, I didn't think of that. Do bastions need champions?"
"They're a rather important part of the package," Nathan said dryly. "You mean you aren't interested in them?"
"I live in a tower by myself, surrounded by summons that don't talk, and a wall that keeps busybodies out. The only people I put up with are you and Anna." Vera groaned.
I figured I could use the summons and binding stone power. Didn't think that far ahead.
Well, we have a whole apprenticeship for you to work out a solution to that, Nathan said.
Part of him felt glad that she wasn't keen on champions. That likely meant she would be one of the exceptions who went with champions of the same gender. Vera shot him an appreciative smile. They rejoined the strategy meeting. Soon, they readied themselves for their assault on Phaeus's fortress. Faye gave orders to the Beastkin knights. They'd be out of contact for some time, which left the army vulnerable. That meant Faye's knights were the best defense the army had, and Faye left her officers in overall command. A lot of Beastkin tails wagged violently. Anna's nobles tried not to look too displeased. Notably, Lord Flights didn't seem to mind. He had returned as Anna's captain and assisted Sen in organizing her troops. While the other nobles quietly muttered and tittered about Faye's orders, Flights enjoyed a tankard with a couple of Beastkin to the side.
"He's discussing his brewery, isn't he?" Nathan asked Anna.
"How did you guess?" Anna asked.
"His lips are moving, he's drinking beer, and he looks happy."
Nathan smiled.
"Do you think he'll return as your captain next time?"
"Probably. He doesn't need to do much, and he uses the campaigns as a chance to recruit salespeople and market his ale. Right now, I think he's doing both."
Anna gestured to the Beastkin.
"There's a lot of cashed-up Beastkin roaming Garrick County right now. Plenty more are looking for work outside of the army."
"Well, that was a pleasant surprise."
Nadime walked up to them.
"We are ready to go."
With a wave of his arm, Nathan called everybody close to him. Anna moved away so that she couldn't be caught up in Nadime's spell. Her teleportation didn't work that way, but Nathan appreciated Anna's concern. Nadime's tails glowed, and a pentagon appeared below her body. Moments later, a soft blue glow appeared around the bodies of everybody being teleported. Nathan, Faye, Sunstorm, Sen, Nadime, and Seraph were going. Only Vera stayed behind, because duo gem champions were far beyond what her sorcery could easily handle. The golden pentagon filled with light. The next moment, Nathan's vision shifted. The tents, fields, and distant view of the city vanished and was replaced by a gray stone chamber. They were inside Castle Tartus.
Chapter 37. They stood inside an empty chamber, weapons readied. Two double-door wooden gates formed exits. Otherwise, the room was empty. Wooden torches lined the walls. Upon closer inspection, Nathan confirmed they were fake. The tips of them were lit with magic, and the fire was a form of magical light.
"This isn't the basement," Seraph noted.
"I thought about it, and in the end, I agree with Nathan," Nadime said.
"And besides, aren't I the bastion?" Nathan grumbled. "If I say it's suicidal to try to claim a binding stone from a bastion while they're here, it's suicidal."
"I think you're overestimating Phaeus. You might be able to crush intruders in an instant, but he struggles with constructing an empty room," Seraph said.
"People do amazing things when under pressure, and he'd still have a binding stone even after we claimed this one."
Nathan shook his head.
"We're dealing with him first. Nadime, do you know where he is?"
Nathan's magical senses searched nearby but found little. If he cast a spatial detection spell, he could find Phaeus quickly, but that meant burning a lot of binding stone power. Every drop of power would be necessary when fighting Phaeus. Nathan had the power and technique to fight Phaeus, but it was going to be expensive, given how far he was from any of his binding stones.
"Give me a minute," Nadime said.
Her tails whirled around behind her. After several seconds, Nathan felt magical power wash over them. That was Phaeus.
"Search while we move," Nathan grunted. "We've been detected."
Both doors shimmered. The gaps between them vanished as the wood congealed together. A creaking noise sounded in the walls. With a pulse of magic, Nathan stabilized the room around him. The creaking stopped. Power from the binding stones flooded through his body as he prevented Fias from modifying the structure of the room. This was how bastions fought. The defensive bastion had the power to change the world on a whim, but he needed to actively change things, whereas the attacker only had to keep things the same. Maintaining reality was far cheaper than changing it, despite the distance from Nathan's binding stones. The downside was that he needed to be proactive while stopping Fias. It was like a reality-preserving bubble. If Nathan stopped casting it, Fias could change the castle within seconds. Every change cost Fias 10 times as much power, but Nathan needed to cast continuously. "Seraph," Nathan said, pointing at the door in front of them. Her jade gems flashed, and an energy wave vaporized the wooden door. Everybody piled through and into a long hallway that was filled with paintings and glass displays. Taking a risk, Nathan let go of his bubble of protective magic. Nothing happened. Fias's presence had left. Did he not understand how this worked, or was he preparing a trap up ahead? Clattering noises echoed from both sides. Dozens of knights poured into the hallway. They were humans and heavily armed and armored. Their armor was painted black and had visible abs sculpted into the torsos. It was also enchanted, which Nathan figured to be the more important part. But really, sculpted abs on the armor? Was that necessary? The knights formed a shield wall on either side, halberds held aloft. Behind them, battle mages formed up and began to cast spells. With a yell, Sen stepped forward and pointed an arm at either side. A square appeared in each hand. Before any of the battle mages finished their spells, gouts of flame roared down both ends of the hallway. Halberds melted in the searing heat. Shields and armor glowed as their enchantments attempted to protect their wearers. Screams ripped through the Federation ranks, and soon they were in full retreat. Within moments, the hallway emptied, save for some melted weapons and a few unfortunate casualties. "Narime, heal them if they're not dead," Nathan said. Her healing wasn't great, but it was all he had among his champions. "I assume you've found Fias by now."
"Everybody is gathering in one location, so it's not too hard to guess where they're going," Narime said, as she cast healing spells. She bit her lip. "But it's not somewhere you expected, which makes me think it's a trap."
"Nathan has said everything is a trap. Is this any different?" Sen said.
"I feel I'm being misrepresented," Nathan said.
"You're really not," Seraph said.
"Agreed. Fias isn't the sort to lay traps," Sunstorm added.
Throwing his arms into the air, Nathan gave up. He gestured for Narime to continue.
"They're gathering in the grand hall of the castle."
He raised an eyebrow. "I remember you saying that was enormous. Large enough to fit an army, enormous."
"It is. Tanius uses it to intimidate guests whenever he needs to put on a display of strength," Seraph explained. "It's several stories tall, vaulted ceiling, marble columns, everything is gilt with gold, and the galleries can fit thousands of people, which is great for when you want to squeeze in an army to glare down at visiting envoys."
"Or attackers," Nathan said. "I really hope he's not thinking of this like a conventional battle. Bastions are better off fighting in enclosed spaces, so they can..." He trailed off and made a squishing motion with his hands.
"It's Fias. Why are you surprised?"
Because he's still a bastion." Nathan let out a grunt. "Did he get to the position he's in without fighting anyone?"
"When have you ever fought a bastion, Nathan? The Empire's battling Trafom, but it's one of the largest wars to happen for almost a century," Narime said. "All the bastions with much experience fighting one another are long dead."
"Or should be." Nathan knew better, but he had gotten caught up in the heat of the war. In his timeline, battles between bastions became normalized due to the fights over the Empire's former territory. He hadn't really thought about the fact that peace had been relatively normal before then. True, but there's a lot written on it, Nathan said.
Ah, yes, books. Fius's favorite pastime, Seraph said with a broad grin. While you may choose to read tomes about ancient magical experiments, I suspect your opponent's mind would melt reading a book about sexual positions, even if it had drawings in it.
I feel as if underestimating him will get somebody killed, Nathan muttered.
Feel free to overthink and worry about him, then. But for me, the real worry are his champions, Seraph said. We need to make sure we pick the right fights.
A fair point. Fius had 3 duo gem champions, an amethyst, a diamond, and a sapphire. A very standard trio. Nathan refused to say anything bad about those choices, however. His first champion, Vala, had worn a garnet, which was the most popular gem in Falmir by far. Nathan had also lectured Faye about the dangers of underestimating the more generic gems. Amethyst champions were extremely capable fighters in close quarters, with their weaknesses primarily being opponents they couldn't reach, or who had methods to counter physical strength. The former was why Nerevia favored her crossbows. Diamond champions were the definition of durability. For many bastions, they formed the core of a team of champions. An amethyst champion could launch devastating attacks, then hide behind her diamond counterpart. They could also keep bastions safe. That had been part of Kiana's role in Nathan's timeline, although she had plenty of experience working with Yphela. And sapphire champions made for great sorcerers and wild cards. If anybody was dangerous in Fius's team, it was his sapphire champion. Or she would be, if Seraph didn't know what her gems did. Narime was confident she could counter the champion's abilities, and that reduced Fius's sapphire to a mere sorceress, which was decidedly less impressive. The trick was preventing Narime from being tied up by the other champions, or Seraph being targeted by the sapphire champion, or Faye or Sen getting cornered by the amethyst, or relying on Sunstorm to take out a diamond champion she probably couldn't even scratch. There were many ways that things could go wrong for Nathan. If Fius's champions played their cards right, it was possible to make things exceedingly difficult. That was a big if. Nobody accosted them on the way to the grand hall of the castle. Nathan felt Fius monitoring them from time to time, but no effort was made to attack them. Eventually, the group approached a pair of gargantuan stone doors. They stood over 2 stories tall and were covered with the golden lily pattern of the Federation. Magic caused the doors to swing open as Nathan and his champions approached. The hall's interior looked as ostentatious as Seraph had described it. Marble columns lined the walls. The windows were large enough to allow a dragon to fly through them, if such a beast existed. The floor tiles were inlaid with gold. 2 huge galleries fanned the central walkway that led to the far end of the hall. Each of them stood a whole story off the ground and was the size of the hall back in Garrick Pass. At the far end of the grand hall was a raised platform. Fius stood there, although he looked far smaller than before. Even he looked small in a room of this size. If Fius had intended to fight a battle somewhere he could show off, he had both succeeded and failed. Castle Tartus's grand hall was impressive, but Fius looked the opposite. The grandiose hall made the bastion appear as small and insignificant as he truly was. "When you said an army could fit in here, I didn't think you were being literal," Nathan said.
"My mistake."
Narime gave him a sidelong look. Faye and Sen took up defensive positions in front of Nathan. To his sides, Narime and Seraph remained relaxed. Sunstorm grabbed his arm, and he gave her a smile.
"Relax," he said.
"Those balconies are packed with soldiers," Narime said.
She was right. There were hundreds of soldiers packed onto the balconies, and even more below them. They tried to hide behind the railing and stone walls, but failed.
"Bastion Nathan, I presume," Fius called out.
His voice echoed across the entire hall.
I'm amazed that you were stupid enough to come here. You walked right into my trap.
He actually said it. Nathan couldn't believe what he was hearing. Fias clicked his fingers, a smug smile on his face. Hundreds of soldiers rose from their hiding positions and pointed crossbows at Nathan and his champions. Below the balconies, more soldiers raised spears and shields. They didn't move yet.
At my command, I can end you, Fias said. Every crossbow is enchanted. Their bolts are enchanted. 1,000 crossbow bolts at once, empowered with the magic of a bastion, all crafted with the purpose to kill another bastion.
A pause. Nathan gestured for his champions to remain still. Sunstorm fingered her swords, looking grumpy. Both she and Seraph glared at Fias.
Surrender, and I'll let you live. Although I don't promise I won't make you watch what comes after.
Fias laughed, a lewd grin on his face, and his eyes certainly weren't on Nathan.
Right, okay. So he's immensely stupid, Nathan said.
Stupid? I'd go with evil, Narime muttered.
She and most of the others appeared to be furious. Fias had made his intentions toward them clear.
I generally think you need to have some intelligence to be evil. Animals can't be evil. I'm not sure if Fias is thinking with anything other than instinct and his dick.
Nathan shook his head. I really have overthought this. He genuinely tried to antagonize me into surrendering.
No, I think he wants to kill you, Seraph said. He's just an arrogant idiot who thinks he's in a winning position.
Well, time to end this charade, Nathan said.
His champions looked at him, the looks of anger slipping from their faces.
Narime, summon a barrier for us. Seraph, you clear the right gallery. Send the left. Try to scare them or incapacitate them, but do what you have to. Faye and Sunstorm, you protect the barrier in case the champions get here faster than expected.
Yes,
all his champions snapped out at once. A lot happened in the next several moments.
Narime began to cast a barrier.
Fias shouted, and the twang of hundreds of crossbows filled the hall. A rain of glowing crossbow bolts poured down on them. Seraph's jades flashed. She ran toward the right-hand gallery, but flicked her tonfas out. 2 waves of energy rippled through the air. Every crossbow bolt disintegrated in midair. The air filled with enough dust that Nathan found it difficult to see Fias for several seconds. Narime's glowing blue barrier snapped into place moments later. More bolts slammed into it and exploded into pieces, presumably fired by the soldiers who had taken too long. Crossbows took longer than that to load. The sound of 1,000 winches being wound hurt Nathan's ears. He held a hand against the side of his head.
Fuck, he said. This place has awful acoustics. Did they place an oral ward over the windows?
Faye whimpered, her ears flat against her head, but she held her scimitar in the air. It shimmered with azure flames, and she kept an eye out for attackers. Screams overwhelmed the winding sound. The winches stopped. Nathan looked up and saw a meteor appear in the far corner of the hall. To his side, Sen's supercharged 4th-rank spell finally finished. The meteor slammed into the left gallery. Soldiers scattered. Chunks of flaming rock and lava flew everywhere. The stonework creaked. Moments later, the entire balcony collapsed. 1,000s of tons of granite and wood crashed down onto the soldiers below.
Whoops,
Sin said, wincing.
Does that count as incapacitated?
We are at war, Nathan said, and it would be worse outside. You could be turning the ground under 1,000s of soldiers into lava.
That sounds pretty horrific, Sen said. Let's avoid doing that for as long as possible. Although, I guess you kind of did that with that insane flesh-eating magic against the demons, huh?
She stared at him, realizing how vicious Nathan's spells were. To the right, Seraph leaped into the air. The soldiers screamed in terror and began to flee. They had seen what had happened to the other gallery. What would this champion do to them?
Stand and fight, you cowards! Fius shouted. Lucia, get them!
Fius's champions remained stationary. Their expressions were grim as they raised their weapons. They spoke to each other and to Fius, and he shouted obscenities back at them. A difference of opinion, evidently. Seraph unleashed her waves of energy at the gallery. The stonework exploded into clouds of dust. So did the armor and clothing of the soldiers in the way. Hundreds of soldiers fell on top of those below them, forming a pile of bodies. Nobody charged out to attack Nathan. The soldiers that had escaped Seraph ran toward doors in the side of the hall and fled.
Fine, I'll do it myself, Fius said.
Nathan felt the power of another bastion swell below him. After a long wait, Fius had finally remembered that he had a binding stone. Chapter 38. Before Nathan could react, Fius's power surged into the nearby ground. A stone hand, larger than a man, rose up behind Nathan. Nathan jumped away, cursing. The hand continued to move toward him, stone pouring from the ground to extend its reach. Blue flames slammed into the stone. They did nothing, as the stone was entirely natural once it was created by Fius. A golden square flared in Naughty May's hands, and the hand collapsed to the ground in an explosive heap. Shards of stone flew everywhere as the hand burst into pieces. Naughty May raised an eyebrow. The foundation of the hand remained standing, but everything above it had been blown apart.
Good thinking, Nathan said.
Presumably, she had used a force spell to blow it apart. His lesson learned, Nathan started pumping power around him to prevent Fius from altering the foundation of the room.
Time to think harder, Naughty May said. Get behind me.
Nathan turned and saw two champions running toward him. One was the amethyst champion that Fius had called Lucia, and she was carrying a battle axe. The other was a sorceress in a battle robe with two sapphires. The diamond champion remained behind. That made this easier than expected. Nathan darted backward and watched as a wind spell fizzled out in midair. Naughty May's gems flashed again and canceled out another spell from the sapphire champion. Lucia charged, her gems glowing and battle axe over her head. It slammed into the ground, and the entire hall shook. The stone blocks in front of her burst into pieces as a shockwave rippled toward Nathan. Flames attempted to block the shockwave's path, but passed harmlessly through it. Faye squawked in surprise. Naughty May's barrier snapped into place just in time to stop the shockwave from passing through.
Can't counter that, can you, bitch?
Lucia shouted. Naughty May scowled.
You can't? Nathan asked.
It's not a skill or ability. She's just projecting raw force with her hits, Naughty May said. I'd need to use a force spell to stop it.
That sounded like an alternate version of Nerevia's gem enhancement. Lucia leaped through the air and crashed down in front of them. Her pigtails flicked in front of her, and she slammed her axe into the barrier. The entire thing cracked. Flames roared across Lucia's body, and she screamed. Turning, she swung her axe. The air rippled. Several moments later, the stone wall exploded in a cloud of dust. Yes, her gem enhancement was exactly like Nerevia's. The difference was that it was a long-range weapon. Lucia had an on-demand ability to essentially destroy anything she swung at. Very effective for an amethyst champion, if single-minded. Faye ducked and weaved as Lucia swung at her. Huge chunks of the hall were blown apart. Faye had a large part of her torso cut to ribbons, and blood flew everywhere. She went down, a scream tearing from her mouth. Shit, Nathan said. He drew his sword and almost leaped forward. Sunstorm appeared behind Lucia, swords raised. Lucia reacted instantly and spun. Her shockwave obliterated Sunstorm, turning her into tiny little pieces of darkness.
Ha! How pathetic, Lucia said.
She sneered at Nathan and posed.
Lucia! Fias shouted.
It was too late. Lucia's face warped from smug pleasure to shock. She tried to scream, but there was suddenly a lot of blood blocking the flow of air through her throat. Having your throat slit had that effect. Sunstorm poked her head over Lucia's shoulder.
Shh.
All that had been killed earlier had been one of Sunstorm's shadow decoys, and Lucia had been too stupid to notice. Perhaps the lack of blood should have given it away, Nathan thought. Lucia glared at Sunstorm as blood bubbled down her throat. Even though she was a champion, Lucia's wound was fatal. If an ordinary person tried to slit her throat, the dagger would break. Sunstorm wasn't an ordinary person. Lucia spun, her amethysts flashing as she used the last of her strength to swing at Sunstorm. Useless. Sunstorm vanished in a puff of darkness. Lucia slipped in a slick of blood that had formed at her feet. She slammed face first into the sharp mess of stone pebbles she had made with her shockwaves, and fell silent. A moment later, Sunstorm appeared above her. Without a moment of hesitation, the olive-skinned assassin rammed both of her swords into Lucia's back. She twisted, just in case. Then she pulled her blades back out, cleaned them off on Lucia's uniform, and gave them a twirl. Nathan turned away from the vicious execution. It was a grim reminder that Sunstorm was both a talented killer, but also one that enjoyed her work. In the distance, Fias glared at Nathan. Power pulsed below Nathan, but it was far enough below him that he ignored it. Whatever Fias was doing, it didn't involve modifying the hall itself. Nathan wasn't going to waste binding stone power on stopping Fias outside of their immediate surroundings. Beside Fias, his diamond champion desperately fought off Seraph. At a glance, the battle appeared one-sided. The diamond champion blocked or deflected all of Seraph's attacks and repeatedly dealt vicious thrusts and cuts against Seraph. Blood splashed across the raised platform that Fias stood on. A lot of blood, and even a few fingers. But Seraph simply rolled her shoulders after every blow she took and kept fighting. Her gems glowed constantly. Nathan watched as her flesh stitched itself back together, or her fingers grew back in place. Her tonfas couldn't repair themselves, but they were made of far sturdier stuff than Seraph was. The same couldn't be said for the diamond champion. Although her armor appeared intact, her clothes were not. Flesh could be seen between the cracks in her armor, and her legs were almost entirely bare. She winced whenever she was forced to move to block Seraph, presumably because her plate armor was now directly pressing against her skin. Her shield had cracks along its edges, and the edges of her sword were crumbling. Seraph struck a blow with her tonfas, and the diamond champion blocked it with her sword. This time, the entire sword crumbled into dust as an energy wave blew it apart. Seraph didn't give her opponent time to react. She pushed forward and slammed a tonfa into the other champion's face. Bone crunched, but the diamond champion merely gritted her teeth. Unfortunately, being immune to pain only prolonged the inevitable if your weapons and armor had fallen to pieces. Seraph laid blow after blow into the champion, while Fias backed away from his dying protector.
Narime, could you finish her off? Nathan said, grimacing.
I can. I think we're about done here, Narime said, turning her gaze away from the champion she had been dealing with.
Nathan's gaze shifted to the sapphire champion for a moment, or more accurately, the pile of ash that had been the sapphire champion. Sen leaned on her greatsword, haze rising off her body. Nathan had missed the duel, but he could imagine it. Spells being thrown back and forth, Narime countering the more dangerous ones. The result would have been that the sapphire champion relied on faster spells, forcing Sen into close quarters combat and raw power. The experience gap meant that Sen couldn't cast as fast as the Duo Gem Champion, but Sen did have Ifrit's raw power. The result was plain to see. One champion was very dead, and the other was exhausted. Nathan made a note to shift Sen's training toward her Spellblade specialization. She had spent the last year focused on the basics of sorcery. That had backfired against Laura, even if it had helped in a lot of other situations. And Sen had fallen back on her instincts in this fight. The time was right to teach Sen some new things. Nadime's hands glowed, and she snapped off a quick fourth-rank spell. The diamond champion's chest caved in suddenly, and she was blown off her feet. She crashed to the ground near the far wall and didn't get back up. A glare was thrown at Nadime, who stuck her tongue out in return. In only a few short minutes, Phaeus's champions were dead. His soldiers had fled. The hall was a smoldering, broken ruin. This had turned out pretty normal by Nathan's standard of bastion duels. They were short, vicious things. Champions were incredibly powerful. It was impossible for them to fight seriously without killing each other. When somebody had the power to destroy armies with a single ability, or specialized in assassination, going all out meant death was the natural result. Sparring always meant holding back on a champion's best techniques. When Narime had attacked Nathan, she had controlled her force spells. The one she used against the diamond champion had shattered her ribcage and crushed all her internal organs. If Narime had used that spell against Faye during the fight at Castle Forselberg, then it was likely she would have won. The cat girl wouldn't have gotten back up after a blow like that. Phaeus looked around in shock. The flow of his power into the castle had halted. Then, suddenly, it roared back, directly beneath Nathan.
"I'll end this! Now!" Phaeus shouted.
Nothing happened, because Nathan didn't let it. He sighed. Phaeus held his hand out, as if that would somehow allow his binding stone power to overwhelm Nathan's. Huge amounts of magic poured through Nathan from his binding stones. It was a good thing he had three of them. This was becoming expensive.
"What is he doing?" Narime asked loudly.
"He made a trap beneath me. He's trying to set it off, but I'm stopping him. Because we're both bastions, and we both have the ability to manipulate reality," Nathan replied, speaking just as loudly. The remaining champions in the room gave Phaeus sympathetic smiles, although most of them were fake. The looks on Seraph's and Sunstorm's faces screamed murder.
"Do you surrender, Phaeus?" Nathan asked.
"You killed them," Phaeus said.
"I did. That's what happens in war. Are you going to pretend you didn't try to kill me or make those threats earlier?" Nathan said.
Phaeus stewed in his anger and said nothing.
"Can I?" Sunstorm asked.
Nathan waved his hand. It was time to end this. As if she had been waiting all day for this moment, Sunstorm teleported to Phaeus's side instantly. The bastion stepped back when she appeared in front of him.
"Sunstorm, you're supposed to be my champion. Help me. You swore loyalty to me," Phaeus said. "That's not how loyalty works, Phaeus," Sunstorm said. "And I don't particularly remember you being very loyal to me. You told Seraph I was dead. You sent me away on every mission the others didn't want to do. Didn't you?"
"No, that—"
Phaeus began to say something, but didn't bother finishing it. He lashed out with a fist as Sunstorm advanced on him. He moved faster than Nathan expected him to. Even if Phaeus was an idiot, he at least knew how to enhance his body with his binding stone. Sunstorm's head exploded into black particles, and Phaeus blinked in surprise. Instinctively, he rolled forward and avoided having his head cut off when Sunstorm reappeared behind him. He didn't avoid getting his legs swept out by Seraph, who came up while he was distracted.
"Seraph, wait!" Phaeus shouted.
Seraph didn't bother to listen like Sunstorm had. She rammed her tonfas into Phaeus's head. Nathan turned away, unwilling to watch the show of gore that resulted. Phaeus only screamed briefly before either Seraph or Sunstorm shut him up.
"It's over," Narime said.
She looked grimly satisfied, although Sunstorm appears to be angry. "She likes to collect heads," Nathan said, "and Seraph just ruined her prize." Narime gaped at him.
"You're joking. Please tell me you're joking."
He looked at her, unsmiling. The next few minutes were slow. Narime healed Faye while Seraph and Sen helped the wounded soldiers from the rubble. The survivors appeared shell-shocked and unsure why they were being saved. "It's over," Nathan told the officers that were mobile enough. "Fius is dead. There's no other bastion close enough to TARDIS to fight back. Go home to your families. I'm not here to burn your city. I'll take Tanius and leave." The message seemed to be relatively well received, even if he saw smoldering anger in their eyes. These men had seen him destroy their city's defender. But what mattered was that Nathan convinced them to leave without fighting. He hoped the same message worked on the army outside.
"Nathan, did I do well?" Sunstorm asked, prancing up to him.